Jiminy Crickets.
Jiminy Cricket is the name. I'm a happy-go-lucky fellow, always getting in the wrong for singing my song. A merry old soul am I. Jiminy Cricket is the name. I'll be hanging around this evening. I'll be tipping my hat and telling you that Jiminy Cricket is the name.
Hello, Cricketeers. This is our first Dateline Jiminy Crickets for 2024. Because we're now doing them every other month, and we didn't have one in January. And I'm here with Ruthie. Hello, Ruthie.
Hello, Chris. Hello, Cricketeers.
And we have some very special segments. We have a top 10. We have a tribute to a late Disney legend. And we have some Disney history in our final segment. And before we get to that, we have a very special announcement. Dateline Jiminy Crickets proudly endorses Concierge Vacation Planners, a Disney-authorized specialty vacation planning service. Concierge doesn't just book your trip, they walk you through the entire process, helping you plan out every detail, one-on-one, to make the very most out of your vacation while saving you both time and money. And the best part is, they charge nothing for their services. You will get the exact same pricing as if you booked your vacation directly through Disney. But in using Concierge expertise, you've got the added bonus of having your very own personal Disney guru planner by your side. Both Ruthie and I are also satisfied customers, and we just can't recommend them enough. Visit their website at www.concierge.com. That's www.concierge.com, as in mouse ears. So when you book your next Disney vacation, be it Walt Disney World, Disneyland, the Disney Cruise Line, or many of the other Disney destinations available worldwide, contact Concierge Vacation Planners, and be sure to tell them Disney Chris sent you. So with the Oscars coming up in March, we thought we would do some segments on this episode that are Oscar-related. I almost said Oscar-worthy. All of our segments are Oscar-worthy.
Yes.
So we're going to start off the show with a top 10 as normal, and our top 10 is Oscar-themed this week. This bi-monthly episode. And it's going to be the top 10 Academy Award-winning Walt Disney animated shorts. So there's only 11. So we just had to leave out one.
There's 12.
Oh, there's 12?
Yeah.
Well, we know what's the one that... Oh, I know what it is. Okay, so we left out the last one, which is It's Tough to Be a Bird. And we also left out one other, and I'll let you figure out which one that is as we go through. But we did these not in chronological order, but in the order of Ruthie and my opinion of our favorites. Personal for just the ones we enjoy. Just personal enjoyment. That's the only criteria. So you may not agree, but this is Ruthie and my opinion. So, Ruthie and I agree, but you don't have to agree. And if you disagree, feel free to say what your ranking would be in the comments. We welcome your thoughts. But this is how we feel about it. And so, let's get started. Do you want to go first, Ruthie, or do you want me to go first?
I'll go first, it's fine.
Okay, so here is our number 10.
All right, this is the Silly Symphony short, The Country Cousin.
Mm-hmm.
And the basic plot is that they're two miser cousins. One lives in the country, one lives in the city.
Yes.
And the one from the country visits the cousin that lives in the city.
Yes.
And, you know, he's just amazed at what he's seeing because, you know, everything in the city he hasn't been exposed
yes.
to yet.
Right. So
that's a basic plot.
some fun facts. Do you know the names of these mice? They didn't have names in the cartoon, but they later appeared on the Sunday comics in the newspapers, and they had names. Do you know what they are?
I do.
Okay.
One is named Abner, and the other one is Monty.
Do you know which one is which? Abner
Monty.
Is the country.
Yeah.
And Monty.
So then Monty's the city.
Yes, by default.
Yes.
So, also, this is based on an Aesop's fable, as are a lot of these silly symphonies, you'll find out.
Mm-hmm.
So, also, this was the winner for 1936 for Best Animated Short.
Mm-hmm.
So, the next one, this is our ranking. This is not chronological or historical significance, or it's just the ones we enjoy watching the most to the least.
Mm-hmm.
Not that we don't enjoy watching all of them. It's just we enjoy some more than others.
Yeah.
So the next one is from 1937. And this is The Old Mill. And I believe this was the... No, it's not. I take that back. There is one other one. I was going to say this was the last Silly Symphony to win. But there's one other one that won later. This is the second to last. Because one of them is actually, that you're probably thinking, Ruthie, is not technically a Silly Symphony.
Hmm.
So, we don't want to give away what it is yet,
yeah.
So I'm being cryptic about it. But this is the one where they have just, it's not really a plot, it's more of just a mood piece. And
mm-hmm.
it shows a mill and all the, kind of an old abandoned mill that's no longer in operation. And they just show all the various animals who have taken residence in and around the mill. And then a big storm comes, and it shows how they weather the storm, to coin a phrase. And it's
mm-hmm.
just all the things that happen. And the main reason they did this short was because it was to test the use of the multi-plane camera. This
mm-hmm.
was the first use of it. And they were, you know, testing its capabilities and whatnot. So... was impressive, the visuals, so it won.
Mm-hmm.
So what's the next one on our list, Ruthie? Excuse me.
The next one is the 1934 short, The Tortoise and the Hare.
Another Aesop.
Yep. A basic story. Everybody should know this story, you know.
Mm-hmm.
There's a race between a hare and a tortoise, and the tortoise goes slow, and the hare goes fast. And the hare just thinks he's so fast that he's automatically going to win. And so he gets a little cocky and he doesn't end up winning. The tortoise wins.
Because he does little side outings along
yeah.
the way. But anyway, do you remember the names of the hare and the horse?
I do.
Tortoise?
Max Hare and Toby Tortoise.
Yes. And they would appear in two other cartoons.
Mm-hmm.
In addition to the newspapers, again, they would appear. Do you know which ones they appeared in later?
I know there's Toby Tortoise Returns.
Yes.
The
polo, Mickey's polo team.
Oh, okay.
They were in the audience.
Okay.
The Three Little Pigs were there. Shirley Temple was there because they had
okay.
They had the characters mixed with actual celebrities.
Mm-hmm.
Because the teams were the Disney characters against the Hollywood celebrities. Remember that one?
Okay. Mm-hmm.
That's yeah. one they show in the Main Street Cinema, actually.
Mm.
But they show it in black and white, and they turn the sound off. It's actually a color sound cartoon.
Mm-hmm.
So the next one on the list is actually the first. Not only the first Disney, but the first ever short to win an Academy Award, animated short. They actually created the reward for this specifically because they couldn't not give this an Academy Award. This was the first full Technicolor short, and it was so visually impressive, it had to get it an award. So they created a new category just for this. And Disney would win every year for the next, 8 years in a row after this?
Mm-hmm.
They lost in 40, and then they won again in... No, they won in 40.
Not in 40.
They won in 41.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, we'll get to that later. I'm confusing myself. This, of course, is Flowers in the Trees, and it was the first Technicolor, and this is just this is the very basic plot. It's more about the visuals. Boy tree meets girl tree, and then there's a villain tree that tries to take the girl tree away, and then the boy fights back, and all the other living plants in the forest help him fight the villain and defeat the villain, and then he gets the girl back, and then they get married. I mean, that's the plot. There's not that much to it.
We've seen that plot in multiple Mickey cartoons. So
yeah, with Pete and Minnie. Yeah.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Or you could Popeye with Olive and Bluto.
Oh, yep. Olive oil and Bluto, yep.
Okay, so the next one is what, Ruthie?
Next one is the 1939 Silly Symphony short, The Ugly Duckling. And they actually did this short twice. So this is the second one.
It's a remake, yeah.
Yeah. And this is in color. Mm-hmm. And, you know, this is the standard story. Everybody knows The Ugly Duckling.
Is this an Aesop or is this a... I think this is a Hans Christian Andersen.
Yeah, right? it's Hans Christian Andersen. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. So the original was in black and white and very primitive. It was, I think, 1932 that it came out. It was one of the last black and white Silly Symphonies. And this, incidentally, is the final Silly Symphony to win an Academy Award. But oddly enough, this is also the final Silly Symphony. So it wasn't possible for anymore to win an award. But that being said... there's a couple shots from the original, like where he stares into the camera with tears in his eyes, that they replicated in this version. So they do pay homage to a couple of the scenes and shots from the original. But this one is a lot better. It's a lot more emotional. The other one was played more for laughs. This is played more for being touching and heartwarming. Mm-hmm. And it's a tearjerker for sure.
Yeah.
But it's a good one. It's a good short. That's why it's high up on our list.
Yeah.
So the next one is from 1935.
Mm-hmm.
Another Silly Symphony. Most of these are Silly Symphonies. There's only a couple that aren't. A handful. So this is from 1935. This won the award. It's The Three Orphan Kittens. And I think this one won mainly because of the visuals are just so impressive. How they had them running around and they showed the backgrounds moving. Something they sort of replicated decades later with how they filmed Who Framed Roger Rabbit.
Mm.
They sort of captured the same feeling where the backgrounds moved with the camera, the quote-unquote camera, the make-believe camera that's, you know, because this is the animation. So that was so impressive how they animated all that, because as they ran by the couch, the angles of the couch would shift.
Mm-hmm.
So you would see it in three dimension as you would see it in real life as you passed by something. And that had to all be animated. So that was so impressive. There's also a very, very good little moment in this where they get on top of a player piano. Mm-hmm. And they accidentally switch it on and it starts playing with them on it.
Yeah.
And the song playing is Kitten on the Keys.
This has to be like an inspiration for the Aristocats.
Oh, yeah. Lots of things. Mm-hmm. Especially the Aristocats. But also, the competition this year specifically, there were so many incredible... This is like the height of the Silly Symphony era. Music Land came out this year. Who Killed Cock Robin? Did I say that right?
Yes.
And Broken Toys. There's so many amazing Silly Symphonies. So for this one to win out of those, it really says something.
Mm-hmm.
Especially Who Killed Cock Robin, because that one was very popular. Huge. Like, they even featured it in another non-Disney film. They had the audience in this Alfred Hitchcock film was in the theater watching a movie, in the plot of the movie, and the thing that was on the screen during it was Who Killed Cock Robin.
Wow.
Anyway, what's the next one, Ruthie? Our number four.
So the next one is from 1968, so this award was actually presented to Walt posthumously.
Yes.
And this is Winnie the Pooh and the Blustery Day. So this is just the short, like, featurette, which is part of the Winnie the Pooh movie, you know, when there's a blustery day and, you know, people, yes. Some of the characters are getting
the
blown away in Owl's
and
house. What was that?
The Heffalump and Woozle scene.
Yeah. And also Owl's house gets blown down and, yes. you know, things like that, so.
Yeah, this is a really good short. I mean, just on its own. I'd say, yeah. I would have to say that it's the best part of the whole full-length film is this segment.
Mm-hmm.
It was just so well done.
Yeah.
Okay, so our next one is the kind of the most famous, I would say, of all the Silly Symphonies. And that is The Three Little Pigs. Now, is this an Aesop? I think this is Aesop again.
Let's
see. Was The Three Little Pigs Aesop? While you're looking that up, I'll say some things. First of all, the song was such a huge hit, which it's actually one of the first songs ever written specifically by the Disney studio as an original song. There are a couple others, like Minnie's Yoo-Hoo. It's not the first, but it's the first one that became a big, huge hit on the charts. And this was so popular that Disney made it a practice to write songs for his shorts going forward. So if it wasn't for this, we wouldn't have all those amazing Disney songs that we know and love today. Did you find if it's Aesop or not, Ruthie?
It's not.
Who wrote it originally?
It says Joseph Jacobs in 1890.
That late, huh? I think it would be a more... It wasn't even 50 years old when Disney made it into a short. That's interesting. So, my favorite part of this picture is the portrait of their father in the corner. Okay. So, I mean, what can we say about Three Little Pigs? It hasn't been said, so let's move on to the next one. And Ruthie, just to let you know, this is not a Silly Symphony, believe it or not.
Okay.
It did not get the label Silly Symphony. It was called a special short. So what's this?
Oh, that one is... I thought it was your turn.
No, it's your turn. I did okay. Three Little Pigs.
Yes, this is the 1938 animated short, Ferdinand the Bull.
Yes.
And which is about a bull who just wants a leisurely life out in the field smelling flowers, and he does not want to be put in the ring or anything like that with the matador or any of that.
Right.
He...
right.
Now, one day he gets stung by a bee, and so he runs, and he's a really strong fighter, runner.
Yeah.
And so they want to put him in the ring, but that's he is not interested in that at all.
Right.
And this is also the short where the matador is based off of Walt Disney.
Yes, and all of the other, they'd have a little parade of all the various people that are involved in the bullfight.
Mm-hmm.
And they're all based on different animators. And then the matador himself is a caricature of Walt.
Mm-hmm.
So they really go all out to poke fun. Like, to one point where he rips his shirt open and he has a tattoo with a... it says mother on his chest.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think he really had a tattoo. They were just making fun.
Right.
So our number one Academy Award winning short is from 1953, Toot, Whistle, Plunk, Boom. And this was directed by Ward Kimball, and it has his fingerprints all over it. Definitely his humor, his style, and Disney, reluctantly, Walt, that is, was going for a more stylized, less realistic look because that was what was popular in the early 50s because of UPN Studios, which was filled with Disney, people who left Disney and created their own studio, and they were the people behind, you know, that famous Gay Puri and other Mr. Magoo and lots of great stuff from the...
I think it's UPA.
UPA. I said UPN. That's the TV network. UPA. And yeah, I'm sorry. So this was sort of Disney's answer to the UPA look. Mm-hmm. Which was much more stylized and abstract. But Walt detested it. He hated it. He did it because he was felt like he had to. And Ward loved this style.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, once this won an Academy Award, I guess Walt was like, well, I don't know.
Begrudgingly letting them do it, yeah.
And I just noticed something that kind of skeeves me out in this picture. The caveman with the drum, he has little circle hairs going up his arm.
Oh.
That kind of creeps me out. Anyway, these are the cavemen that represent the four different, you know, basic elements of an orchestra. The two... the whistle, the plunk, and the boom. So they kind of go through the history of each part of the orchestra. The percussion, the strings, the horns, and the woodwinds. Mm-hmm. And they call them the toot, whistle, plunk, boom. So this is just a fantastic short. The music, the characters. I personally love the stylized look.
Mm-hmm.
I love the colors. It's very colorful and vivid. And I like that mid-century modern look that it has. Mm-hmm. I really enjoy that. So, that being said, do you have any final words about these shorts, Ruthie? Did anybody notice the one that's missing? We'll talk about that one later.
Yeah. I mean, all of these shorts are good. I agree with you. I love the mid-century modern design of this toot, whistle, plunk, and boom. This is also where you get the Professor Owl sequence that they reused for all of the sing-along videos that they produced in the 80s and 90s.
And this is actually a sequel to another short that also starred him in the same setting, teaching a different lesson called Melody. And it brought back all the characters from the classroom for this, but he taught them a different lesson, music-related lesson. And the first one, I'm sorry, the first one was unique because it was 3D. Both of these had like a unique thing. This one was unique because it was made in stereo, which was like very, very new to do that mm-hmm. in the 50s. Even though Disney had first done it in 1940 with Fantasia, this mm-hmm. was sort of when it became, you know, popular and a lot of movies started doing it. So,
mm-hmm. yeah.
I'm sorry, yeah, I cut you off, Ruthie.
Yeah, that's fine. These are all really great shorts. I like watching all of them. And this is actually a list I had already seen all of these shorts before. So yes. It wasn't anything where I was missing a spot or anything like that. So,
well, there was one that you had not seen, but I forced you to watch it.
It's not we'll on talk, this list.
We'll talk about it later. Yeah.
So, yeah, these are just really great shorts. And, you know, they all deserve the Academy Award that they won.
Yes. It's interesting that Walt won the award, let's see, 32, 33, 34, 35, 36, 37, 38, 39. The first 8 years of the award, he won it.
Mm-hmm.
And then he just won it a few times after and hasn't won it since 1969.
Mm-hmm. Well, which is... Disney probably won, but not Walt.
Well, no, we looked at the list of... There's Pixar that has won, but there has not been any Walt Disney animated short since 1969 that have won for best short.
I don't think they really put out a lot of shorts beyond that time.
They don't. They don't. Yeah. They don't, and that's probably the main reason why. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Just every blue moon they will put out mm-hmm. some special thing, but
mm-hmm.
in fact, even the one from 69 was a special... You know, that's It's Tough to Be a Bird. Mm-hmm. That was sort of a special thing. And it included a lot of live action, too. It wasn't fully animated. Mm-hmm. That being said, let's move on to our very special tribute segment. So we want to remember Disney legend Dick Nunes, who passed away in December. And the... I just want to let you all know that we're not going to continue the practice of doing these memorial segments anymore where we list off all the people since we did our last show that have passed away just because of the fact that it's too depressing and I don't want to make our show about that. Even though we do honor those who have passed away and there are some legendary figures who have Glennis mm-hmm. Johns, for example, and there are mm-hmm. others that have passed. But when it is somebody that is so exceptional to the history of Disney, I mean, Glennis Johns was only in a couple Disney films, but Dick Nunes was essential to the history of mm-hmm. the Disney parks. There's no way we could not discuss him. So every once in a while, we will do a full segment for a specific person of legendary Disney status. Not necessarily mm-hmm. Disney legend, but legendary Disney status.
Right. Right.
Because that's not a criteria either. They just have to be so important to the Disney history and the Disney company that they can't go without being remembered in our show. So that's what we're going to do right now. We're going to talk about Dick Nunes. Well, Ruthie's going to talk about Dick Nunes, and I'm going to nod my head and chime in.
Yeah.
So, all go right. ahead. Take it away, Ruthie.
So, he passed away on December 13th, 2023, in his home in Orlando, Florida. He was surrounded by his family, and he was 91.
Okay.
So, he was born May 30th, 1932, in Cedartown, Georgia. And I couldn't find much about his early life between birth and then college. Mm-hmm. So I do know he went to go to college at mm-hmm. USC, University of Southern California, on a football mm-hmm. scholarship. And his ambition was to become a professional football player. Mm-hmm. But, however, what happened is during one of the games, he actually suffered a broken neck. And
yikes.
So he wasn't able to, become a professional football player.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing about his attendance at USC is one of his classmates was Ron Miller, which is Diane Disney Miller's husband mm-hmm. and Walt's son-in-law.
Yeah.
So Dick graduated in 1955, and then through that connection of Ron Miller, he learned that Disneyland was hiring. So he actually applied for a summer job at the theme park, and he was hired by Van France. That's a name you guys should know in Disney history. Van Arsdale France, Van for short. And he was the founder of the Disney University and author of the Parks Orientation and Training Program. So Dick was hired before the opening of Disneyland. So prior to the opening, him and Van Arsdale began training Disneyland employees, and this first class that they trained included Walt and his executives. So the whole training process, the whole foundation of what the cast members represent at Disneyland came from him and Van France. So during these early years, he learned a Walt Disney's theme park philosophy firsthand, and this is a quote that I found from him. And he said, "Walt believed strongly that what made Disneyland different was the people. He wanted them to feel that they were part of the organization. That's why he established the first name policy. He was Walt, I was Dick, and so on. From an overall operations point of view, the most important thing is to work together and to make sure that when guests come, they have a wonderful experience." So that is a philosophy that he got right from Walt, and that carries on into the Disneyland, processes, procedures, things like that. During this time too, while he was, doing training and orientation and things like that, he, and using this philosophy that he learned from Walt, he coined a phrase, and this is another quote that he says, "One of the phrases we used a lot in training, quote, 'the magic mirror of your smile,' that was my phrase. The expression," so that's his quote, and what this means is you smile and the mirror, in this case, is the a person that you're smiling at smiles back. So that was one of the philosophies that they use at Disneyland with the cast members. So through that, he worked his way up to attraction supervisor, developing standard operating procedures for all of the park's attractions. Many of these are still used today. In 1961, he became director of park operations and helped develop Project X, better known as Walt Disney World. And during the, Walt Disney was having a meeting with cast members during the 10th
century. It was a banquet at the Disneyland Hotel. I have the audio of this on my website, actually.
Okay. This was in 1965, the 10th decennial of Disneyland, and Walt recounted a conversation he had with Nunes about the future of the park. And Walt was explaining that Nunes told him, "We've got to take care of these people. Honestly, Walt, we've got to expand Fantasyland. We've got to expand this park." And then Walt said that Nunes had him working harder than he'd ever worked before to expand Disneyland in order to accommodate the millions of additional guests he knew would visit each year. So, Dick was, he had a mind in the future too, like Walt, and he knew that, the park was only going to get more and more popular. And I'm sure that mindset helped him to get promoted, because you're going to see he just continuously gets promoted. So from 1967 to 1974, he served as chairman of the Parks Operation Committee, and in 1968, he was bumped up to vice president of operations. So he just keeps getting promoted. By 1971, the year the Magic Kingdom opened at Walt Disney World, he was named executive vice president of Walt Disney World and Disneyland. And then in 1972, he was given a window in Walt Disney World, which is located above the Main Street Bakery. And it reads, "The original Dick Nunes Gym, night manager Ron Miller, 24-hour service, Turkish baths, supervisor Dick Nunes." So this is, going back to, you know, his football career and his relationship with Ron Miller.
And Ron was also an athlete, so.
Right.
Yeah.
So in 1980, this is a month after his 25th anniversary with Disney, he was named president of the Outdoor Recreation Division, overseeing Walt Disney World, Epcot Center, and later the Disney MGM Studios theme park. He also consulted on plans for Disneyland Paris and Tokyo Disneyland while serving on the Walt Disney Productions Board of Directors. So again, he is integral in expanding the Disney company into different countries and things like that. So,
yes.
So by May 26, 1999, exactly 44 years to the day since he joined the company, Dick retired as chairman of Walt Disney Attractions. And that same year, he was honored with a window on Main Street USA at Disneyland and was named a Disney legend.
And look who he's with in this picture.
Yes.
Tim Allen at the same Tim time. Allen. Got mm-hmm. his legend award.
Mm-hmm. So the window on Main Street at Disneyland is located above Disney Showcase, and it reads, Coast to Coast People Moving, World Leader in Leisure Management, Dick Nunes, Proprietor, founded 1955, offices Anaheim, Orlando, Tokyo, Wave Machines, a specialty. So there's a couple of explanations that need to be explained here. The people moving first. Coast to Coast People Moving, which is really referring to his role in convincing hundreds of Disneyland cast members to move from Florida to from California to Florida to help open and operate Walt Disney World in 1971. And then the wave machine is actually a reference to an inside joke. So in 1971, Nunes pushed for the installation of a wave machine in the Seven Seas Lagoon at Walt Disney World. And although the machine provided the desired waves, it produced unforeseen complications that and was quickly removed. However, Nunes remained an advocate of providing surfing at the resort and finally got his wish when an updated version of the wave machine opened in 1989 at Disney's Typhoon Lagoon Water Park.
Right, yes, yes, of course. And I think that was the first water park to have a wave machine, and now it's like an industry standard.
Right, right.
Not it's just like with expected. Disney.
Yeah.
Yeah, right.
Mm-hmm. So upon receiving this window at Disneyland, he stated, "This is really quite an honor and a privilege to have my name on Main Street with so many great people that have dedicated their lives to making Disneyland what it is today." Mm-hmm. So in 2022, he released a memoir titled Walt's Apprentice, Keeping the Disney Dream Alive, which follows Disney highlights, including the development and opening of Disneyland, Walt Disney World, Epcot, Tokyo Disneyland, and Disneyland Paris, in addition to the pageantry of the 1960 Winter Olympics and mm-hmm. the Disney attractions at the 1964-65 New York World's Fair.
Mm-hmm.
He also shares anecdotes about learning directly from Walt and championing his vision as Disney expanded worldwide. So that you can purchase. It's out there now. I have a copy of it, and I haven't actually read it yet. But, you know, just talking about him makes me want to read it because I want to know more about
him. And she has a signed copy.
Yes.
She has Dick Nunes in, literally in print, in cursive.
Yes, I got the book at the D23 Expo last in 2022. So.
Uh-huh, yeah.
But we just want to close this tribute out with Bob Iger's statement that he made when this announcement was made that he passed. So Bob Iger says, "Today we mourn the passing of Dick Nunes, a true Disney legend whose contributions to the Walt Disney Company have touched the lives of millions of people all over the world. What started as a summer job training future Disneyland employees will ultimately become a storied 44-year career at Disney. Dick took the values and philosophies we learned directly from Walt and incorporated them into everything he did at Disney. We are grateful for his many achievements, and we extend our deepest sympathies to his family and loved ones." So,
wow.
I hope that you learned about a Disney legend that maybe you didn't know about. because he's not as forefront as some of the other people that you know of, but he definitely had a strong impact on the company and the parks.
And he was a very much a behind-the-scenes person. I had a lot of difficulty finding good pictures of him. And also, I couldn't find a single picture of him with Walt. Now, right. Ruthie said that she thinks there's a picture in his book with Walt, but she's not even 100% sure that it's him in the picture. Yeah. And also,
and it's only one picture.
It's one picture, and that picture is nowhere to be found online, so I didn't have access to it.
Yeah.
So that's why this is the only picture that he's actually with Walt, and Walt's a statue.
Yeah.
So let's move on to our final segment, which again is Oscar adjacent and Oscar worthy. So we're going to talk about all the other Oscars that Walt personally was handed during his lifetime. Mm-hmm. This doesn't include actors or directors other than Walt that received awards. These are the ones he was personally awarded, minus the 10, well, I guess the 9, because one of them was after he passed away. The 9 that we already mentioned, all those right. shorts Oscars were also handed to Walt. So add those 9 on top of what we're going to talk about here. So the first award that Walt ever received from the Academy was a special award just merely for the very creation of Mickey Mouse. And he won this in 1932. It wasn't for any specific project. It was just specifically he was given an Oscar for creating Mickey Mouse. And back in those days, they didn't really have a ceremony. It wasn't on the radio. It wasn't, of course, it wasn't televised in 1932. But so basically they would go to the person with the press and hand them their award, and they would take press photos. So that's what this is. They didn't really have a ceremony or anything. He was just handed it, and he set up a shot with his brother Roy, and they took a picture. And Mickey's there, of course. And this is the actual first Academy Award that Walt Disney ever received. Jumping way ahead several years, all the way to 1939, he won another special award. This one, by this time, they were doing banquets. And it wasn't televised. It wasn't even on the radio. But it was an actual banquet where everyone dressed up. And they took press photos. They even took some film footage. There's film footage of him receiving this award.
Mm-hmm.
And Shirley Temple presented it to him. It's quite a famous little scene that we've all seen as Disney fans. And she says, "Isn't it bright and shiny? I'm so proud, I think I'll bust." So he was awarded a special award, a unique one, and it's the only one of its kind. And it had one big statue and 7 little ones to represent Snow White and the 7 Dwarfs. And for a significant screen innovation, which has charmed millions and pioneered a great new entertainment field for the motion picture cartoon. And this was not awarded until 1939. So back then, they didn't really give the award the year after. As you'll notice on some of these, they kind of gave them out, you know, 1 to 2 years later. It wasn't until later years that they sort of stuck with the year that it was actually, you know. Now we have the award, like, in the beginning of the next year. So, mm-hmm. like, now it's in March. It used to be in February. Now it's in March. And it's for the previous year only. January 1st, 2023 to December 31st, 2023 is what this year's awards is for. So it wasn't always like that, just so you know. So the next award he was presented wasn't until 1941. And this was the last short for many years, not until 1953, would he win another award for best short. And this was for a Pluto short. And I think it's a 1940 short, isn't it? Because he won another one for short for 41. He can't win two in the same year.
It says release October 3rd, 1941.
Okay, well, he won two awards for shorts that year. And we'll talk about what the other one is next. But this was the only sort of main character short that was just a regular short. Mm-hmm. There was nothing different or special about it. It's just a Pluto short. And it wasn't created with any awards in mind. It was just so good that they gave it an award. And it's for Lend a Paw. This is the one where Pluto has a devil on one shoulder and an angel on the other shoulder. You know, the whole id and ego thing. Mm-hmm. I don't know if this is the first time that that dynamic has ever been put on screen. It might be. I don't know. Maybe that's why people liked it so much. Because nobody had ever thought to do the angel and devil trope. Mm-hmm. Before this, but I don't know that to be the case. It could be a thing that had already been done before, but I don't know of anything before this, but that doesn't mean that there isn't, but it could be.
Right.
It's possible. So the next one, this is one of the shorts we skipped, obviously, when we did our countdown. It's still, just because it's not in our top 10 does not mean it's not a good one. It's still a really good short. Mm-hmm. Worth seeing. But the next one is the one we specifically left off of our list for controversial or political reasons, I'd say. Not because, well, this is the one that I forced Ruthie to watch that she had not watched before. And it's kind of hard to stomach it because it shows Donald doing really bad things. Even though it's against his will. And they make a point of saying that it was a nightmare at the end. Mm-hmm. It's still kind of hard to watch Donald do a Heil Hitler and have a swastika on his arm. It's not comfortable. So at the time, we were just getting into World War II, and this was something people needed. They needed to feel, you know, that we were in the right. And we were. So this is quote-unquote propaganda, but I really don't feel this is propaganda because there's nothing in the short that is not true. Mm-hmm. I mean, the Nazis were as bad and probably, well, definitely much worse than they are depicted in this.
Right.
So there's nothing propaganda about it. It's just basically the truth. So, I mean, unless I've been so propagandized that I believe it to be true, I don't know. I doubt it. Because we're a free country with free speech, so I can make my own opinions.
Mm-hmm.
That's part of what the point of this short is, actually. So, anyway, this won the Academy Award for Best Short, and I don't understand how it won the same year that another
short
one. No,
it's 42, not 41.
Oh, this one at 42? Okay, because again, they won the year after.
Mm-hmm.
Even though that one won the year of, which doesn't make sense, but whatever. This one came out before the Pluto one, so. But that being said, there's a funny thing that Donald always says, I've only won one Academy Award! And it was for this. So Mickey's won one Academy Award, Donald, and Pluto. But Goofy hasn't won any.
Nope.
Poor guy. So,
he was nominated, he just didn't win.
Right, well, you know, always a bridesmaid, never a bride.
Right.
So the next one, again, was awarded a couple years after. This was for Fantasia, but it wasn't for Fantasia just because of being the film. It was for technical contributions. It was achievement, sound achievement. because Disney basically invented stereophonic sound with this short. I mean, it had not, it was not a thing until, I mean, the technology was there. Walt wasn't in a lab doing it himself, of course, but he hired the people with the know-how to put all the technology together to create what became what we know today as stereo. And so that, of course, deserved an Academy Award for sound achievement. So this was a certificate of merit. And it's not like they have this award every year.
They don't.
Certain awards they create because something is done that's so impressive. Like, a lot of these awards that Walt has won so far are not every year awards.
Mm-hmm.
Like the Snow White Award, the Mickey Mouse Award, and this award. And the next one we're going to talk about is given every year, but it's not for anything specific. And this is a special award that's given to producers only. And this was awarded to Walt in 1942. And this is called the Irving G. Thalberg Honorary Award. And I believe it's still given to this day, every year. And this is an award given to creative, quote, creative producers whose bodies of work reflect a consistent high quality of motion picture production. So this was given to him for his overall achievements over the decade and that he had been in the film industry. And to think that he was awarded this way back in 1942.
Right.
When there was so much more to come.
Right.
From him. So the next phase, that was sort of phase one of Disney's award.
The animated phase.
The animated phase, right. Mm-hmm. So now we move on to a different phase, and this is the true life adventure phase. And he won an award in 1948 for the very first true life adventure. And this was a documentary short called Seal Island. So they have two documentary awards. They have documentary short and full-length documentary.
Mm-hmm.
And Walt has won several in both categories, but this was a short, so he won for best. And they still give these awards out to this day. So this was Seal Island, which was the very first true life adventure. In 1948, he was awarded this. And then in 1950, he was awarded the same award for another true life adventure short called Beaver Valley. And the title says it all, right?
Right.
So he was kind of sweeping these documentary short awards for a little time here, just like he had done with the cartoons, the cartoon shorts. Now he was sort of the predominant figure in documentary shorts.
Mm-hmm.
Because the next one, go ahead.
Well, the other thing about all of these, like, documentary shorts or whatever, these live-action documentaries, this is the first time people were actually seeing this kind of stuff. You think animal documentaries are like a dime a dozen now, but not back then. This, because it took, like, years and years to film all this stuff. Seal Island, the people that were there, they were there for a year, and this is not even, it's 30 minutes.
And also the nature documentary, even though there had been previous things, but like Ruthie said, few and far between, this was really the first public at large consumption of this type of entertainment. And you can say that the Disney studio pretty much invented the nature documentary. And, you know, like the Nature Channel and Discovery Channel and all the, you know,
National Geographic, which Disney owns now, so.
Yeah, ironically, but they owe everything to these early films because there would be no such thing without, I'm sure someone else would have come along at some point, but.
Right.
Disney really set the standard for this type of entertainment quite high. So the next one was the following year for another short called Nature's Half Acre. This is the one where we all remember with the time-lapse photography of the flowers blooming. something he would return to in a full-length form with the Secrets of Life a few years later. But this is where that idea first came from, this time-lapse photography. And if you think back, 1951, nobody had ever seen anything like that before. So to actually see flowers blooming before your eyes must have been absolutely stunning and incredible for that
time. Is this the one also with like the dancing bugs and things?
Yes, and that's something that they even went more hard on in the Secrets of Life, because it's this is basically the precursor to that. That's kind of the long form version of this. This is basically about all the amazing things that happen in your own backyard. That's kind of the premise, because they're like, okay, we've gone around the world and filmed all these incredible things, but did you know that there's just as much incredible stuff happening, you know, in your backyard? That was kind of the premise of this. So so the next short was the following year again. Short after short, every year he was taking it. And that was Waterbirds. And the title says it all. And the pictures that you see in front of you kind of explain what this film was about. Birds that are involved with water. And then the next year, he released his very first full-length documentary called The Living Desert. And surprise, surprise, now he won the Academy Award for Best Full-Length Animated, or animated, true full-length documentary with The Living Desert. But not only that, he also won two other awards,
but one we already talked about.
Right. Because this was the year he took home four awards, and it was highly publicized. There's a famous picture of him standing in front of a curtain, I assume at the awards. I think he's wearing a tux, and he's holding four statues. Because I think it was unprecedented that somebody had won four in one year. And I don't know that that's... It might have been. I don't know that that's ever been achieved again, to for one person to take home four awards at the same ceremony. But the next one was the first of a new series of documentaries. And this was called the People and Places series. And this, unlike the True Life Adventures, focused more on people from around the world, sort of indigenous populations, but not strictly. There's one about Sweden and Spain, but a lot of them are about, you know, isolated populations who brave the elements, not unlike the Eskimos of Canada. So the first one was the Alaskan Eskimo. And it took home the award for Best Documentary Short. And that same year, he won another award, and this was for Best Two-Reel Documentary Short. And that was for Bear Country. Interestingly, this name would get recycled, we all know, because not only did they name a part of the Nature's Wonderland Bear Country, but later they named a whole themed land in Disneyland Bear Country. But this was the first Bear Country. It was a true life adventure about the American black and grizzly bear. So the next award he won in 1954 was for the second full-length True Life Adventure.
Short.
No, this is full length, Ruthie. If it says short on your list, that's
what he won the award for, Best Documentary Short Subject.
Well, this is a full length movie, Ruthie, so I don't know how that's possible. Either whoever wrote the article got it wrong, or the Academy got it wrong. I'm probably thinking it's more likely that the article you got that from got it wrong. I'm not saying you got it wrong. Somebody put the wrong information. look it up on a different source and see what it says while I continue to talk, Ruthie, so we can fact check that, because this is definitely a full-length film. I didn't even read what you said because I just knew that that's what this was for. Are you looking that up?
I mean, I already have two places that I looked it up.
Well, they probably got it from the same place because this was for Best Documentary Feature. This is a full-length feature. I'm 99.9999% sure that that's what this is. I don't know why they would give it for a short for a full-length film. This is The Vanishing Prairie, which was the second full-length true life adventure. And then the following year, he won for short. And this was for another People and Places documentary. This one called Men Against the Arctic. And I guess this is about people who went up into the Arctic to oil drill or do, you know, scientific research and stuff, and about the dangers that they face. This sort of hits close to home for me because my father, not in 1955, but in the early 60s, he was one of the men against the Arctic. He lived up in the Arctic and he lived on a base and he did radio work in an Arctic place where he was there for 6 months at a time. So this is something my father actually did. So that's interesting. Little tie-in for me. And then his last award that he won during his lifetime was in 1958, and this was for the true life adventure, the Grand Canyon. This was different than any of the others because it was all music. There was no dialogue. They played the actual Grand Canyon suite in its entirety, and they provided the visuals to go along with the suite. You know, like the do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do and all that. So this was his last Academy Award to win during his lifetime.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Ruthie is going to tell you a few fun facts about the records that Walt Disney still holds when it comes to the Oscars.
Yeah. I just looked this up before we started recording because I thought it would be interesting to end this segment. But just so you guys know, Walt Disney still holds 5 Oscar records. And the first one is individual with most competitive Oscars. So that's not counting the, you know, the special Oscars that we already mm-hmm. talked about. So mm-hmm. he received 22 Academy Awards from 1932 to 1969. And that starts from Flowers in the Trees in 1932, and then 1969 was the Winnie the Pooh and the Blustery Day.
No, that was It's Tough to Be a Bird. Or was the award given
in 69?
No, that's not,
that wasn't awarded to Walt. Tough to Be a Bird wasn't.
Well, Winnie the Pooh and the Blustery Day was 68, wasn't it?
Yeah. Okay, so 68.
Yeah.
So between that time period, he won 22 Academy Awards, and nobody else has won 22 Academy Awards in the competitive Oscars. And then he's also the individual with the most total Oscars. So that's the competitive and the non-competitive awards. So the Academy Awards we just talked about and the special awards. So that's a total of 26 awards. He's the individual with the most Oscar nominations. Disney received 59 nominations from 1932 to 1968. So a lot of the ones that we talked about that won was also competing with other Disney entries, other shorts, other things, other movies and stuff like that. And then, and I looked it up too today because I know John Williams is getting very close with Oscar nominations, but he only has 54. Mm-hmm. So Walt Disney still has the most Oscar nominations.
Uh-huh.
He's also the individual with Oscar nominations in the most consecutive years. This is what we talked about. So he was nominated in 22 consecutive years from 1942 to 1963. Mm-hmm. And he is the individual with the most
And technically Oscars. 64, but those awards were not specific to him. They were for Mary Poppins. So they were the Sherman Brothers, Julie Andrews, you know.
Mm-hmm. And then the last one, which you already mentioned, was he's the individual with the most Oscars won in a single year. Mm-hmm. Which we talked about, which was the Living Desert, the Alaskan Eskimo, Bear Country, and then Toot, Whistle, Plunk, and Boom, all mm-hmm. awarded in 1954.
Right.
Or 53.
Well, the awards are the year after, so they were awarded in 54 for the year 53.
Right.
So that's, I think, why we got confused about Winnie the Pooh, because the award was given in 69, but it was for a film produced in 68.
Mm-hmm. So those are the records that he still holds today. I thought that would be interesting.
So that ends our show for this month. And Ruthie, where can everybody find Jiminy Crickets on the web?
You can listen to all of our past shows, including audio versions of Dateline Jiminy Crickets, over on our website, jcricketspodcast.blogspot.com. You can also listen to us on Apple Podcasts under the name Jiminy Crickets. That's with an exclamation point. And be sure to leave us a 5-star review, which helps to promote the podcast. Over on our YouTube channel, we share updates to the Disney Chris website, including the Disneyland Magical Audio Tour, as well as past episodes of the Jiminy Crickets podcast and Dateline Jiminy Crickets. You can find our channel if you search for DisneyChris.com. And remember, .com is spelled out DOTCOM. And don't forget to subscribe and click on the notification bell. You can also join in the conversation over on our Facebook page, Jiminy Crickets Podcast, where you can not only interact with Chris and me and all the fellow cricketeers, but you can also stay up to date on all the latest details of our many worldwide web endeavors. On Facebook, Chris can be found under the name Chris Lyndon. That's L-Y-N-D-O-N, as in Lyndon Johnson. And on Twitter, at Disney Chris 73. If you would like to contact the show with your comments or questions, our email address is disneychrisdotcom@gmail.com. We would love to hear from you.
And on Twitch, you can find my channel under the name DisneyChris_audio_fun. Every Thursday at 7 o'clock Pacific, or 7 o'clock Eastern, and 4 o'clock Pacific, I have a live 3-hour stream where I feature different categories of Disney audio and Disney music. We do both stuff from the park, specifically Disneyland, with some exceptions. And we also do stuff from the films and TV and other areas of Disney. For example, next week's episode will be Disney music of the 20s, 30s, and 40s. And how appropriate that this song is playing when I mention that. From Steamboat Willie. Over on Facebook, I have a special group just for the Twitch channel, which is Disneyland Audio Fun. So the Twitch channel is Disney Chris, but the Facebook group is Disneyland Audio Fun. On Instagram, Ruthie and I have an account called DisneyChris_JC_podcast. And on there, I post pictures, vintage Disney, colorful Disney images every day, and also provide updates to the things happening on all my various endeavors on the web. And my website is called DisneyChris.com. I have over 3,000 tracks from Disneyland and thousands of tracks from the movies and film. Lots of music is found over there. And plus, I do a Disney song of the day every day of the year. And if you would like to help support what we do, our Patreon is patreon.com/DisneyChris. And other donation options can be found on my website at disneychris.com/donate. So, Ruthie, do you have any final words for today?
To quote Walt Disney, laughter is timeless, imagination has no age, dreams are forever.
And always let your conscience be your guide.
Now it's time to say goodbye to all our company. M-I-C.
See you real soon.
K-E-Y.
Why? Because we like you.